Hello, and welcome to Anime Audio Commentary. Today, I'll be commenting on episode 40 of Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood. If you'd like to watch along, then start watching now. So last we left off, it would seem that Major General Armstrong has been recalled to Central briefly to see if they can sort of suss out what's going on. Some people seem to be of the impression that she had definitely done something regarding General Raven's disappearance, but, you know, nobody really has proof yet. It's all conjecture. So it seems like Armstrong and Mustang have a bit of a history here, and they're not particularly friendly. But at the same time, considering that she's on business here with the Führer, I think it can be taken as read that the two of them are essentially on the same side here. You know, they're definitely talking in code here with that whole florist business Mustang went through in one of the previous episodes. Alright, now I think this is going to be interesting because both Wrath and General Armstrong are very stern people. I feel like neither one is going to cede anything. Alright, so Armstrong's playing an interesting angle here. You know, Raven was talkative and loose-lipped, so, you know, I killed him because you don't need someone so unreliable. With the tacit subtext being, so pick me instead. I mean, she obviously doesn't intend to truly take part in this whole thing. But that's sort of like the lip service she's giving, you know. I want to take his place at the table, as it were. Alright, so it seems to have worked. You know, General Armstrong has now taken General Raven's place, but at the same time, Fort Briggs is now going to fall immediately under the control of the Führer's men. Which is definitely not good, considering how they want to carve what I think they referred to as a crest of blood. which is to say they want to cause a massacre. I mean, I guess the good thing is that the troops at Briggs are aware, you know, they won't just be led into a slaughter mindlessly. They'll at least put up a fight, so, you know, any surprise attacks here wouldn't go off entirely without a hitch. So, Mustang and Hawkeye here are having a bit of a guarded conversation about work. I mean, obviously they can't talk too much about what's actually going on. But at the same time, you know, they're sort of saying things without saying them outright, you know, talking in code. I mean, I can't imagine they're doing much in the way of Morse code, considering they're merely tapping things twice, but they're definitely exchanging information surreptitiously. Oh dear. So, Hawkeye has seen fit to share that bit of information. Selene Bradley is a homunculus. That's a tough pill to swallow, obviously, because, you know, if nothing else, he looks like a kid. And if Mustang were to go, you know, full napalm on Selene Bradley without really good justification, that's gonna look pretty bad. Alright, so now it seems like we're getting a nifty little flashback. Whether this is Father in his youth or Hohenheim, it's not clear. But it seems that he's some sort of a servant, or a janitor or something. So this is an interesting little exchange here between the man and the little, I almost want to call it a soot sprite from Spirited Away, the little creature in the flask. Alright, so this is interesting. You know, the little creature says, I was born from you. You know, your blood was taken to create me. So it seems like perhaps this is the origin of the relationship between Hohenheim and Father. You know, Father could have been created from Hohenheim, as indeed this suggests. So there we have it. Hohenheim, I guess, had humble beginnings and presumably through his own intelligence managed to rise in station. I find it interesting that it's the little creature in the flask that's sort of giving him the idea that he can have more in life. You know, you don't just have to be a slave. You can learn, you can do things, and sort of like the foundation of that is reading and writing. Very interesting. So it would seem as though this creature is the very first homunculus, and sort of with his tutelage, I guess, Hohenheim sort of progressed in life, you know, reading, writing, learning, eventually learning alchemy. So it seems like Hohenheim owes a fair bit to the homunculus in that, you know, he now has, like, his own little, I guess you'd call it a trade. You know, he's an alchemist now and presumably a free man. You know, it's interesting that even back then, Hohenheim is sort of, I guess, warm to the idea of having a family. And what we've seen of him later, you know, he doesn't really act like it, which is interesting, but I suppose that's because of whatever events happened in the intervening years. So I feel like the homunculus is asking for a little too much here, saying, you know, hey, Hohenheim, can you let me out of the flask? I feel like that's not a good idea. Alright, so it seems like the little homunculus in the flask here is being treated as a source of knowledge. You know, this ancient king wants immortality, and the homunculus seems to be the conduit to that knowledge. You know, I think that devious grin means he's trustworthy. Surely he wouldn't do anything bad, right? Okay. So I'm noticing a bit of a pattern here. You know, the king ordered irrigation canals dug throughout the entire country of Xerxes. And from that bird's eye view, it looked like they were forming a circle. And now bands of men, presumably under the king's orders, are going around slaughtering people. You know, this seems a lot like, the little ritual that's being enacted in the modern day. So, you know, this whole thing begs the question, if the King of Xerxes did this way back when, then, what was the outcome? Did this happen before the fall of Xerxes, or did the fall of Xerxes interrupt it? You know, what's the deal here? Because surely this all fits together somehow. The only question is, precisely how? So it's interesting, it seems to have taken long enough for Hohenheim to grow reasonably older, you know, to at least about the age that he appears to be forevermore. So I find it interesting that Hohenheim is just sort of like a passive observer to this whole thing. It's like, you know, the king's going to gain immortality. You know, no one thought this was possible. This is going to be a real cool thing, especially if he's a good king. But, you know, despite this being a ritual for immortality, it really does seem to be one, kind of spooky, and two, similar to how human transmutation looks. So the king says the homunculus told him that if they were in the center of the circle, they would be unharmed. But given that Hohenheim is unharmed, it seems like he's truly in the center. You know, it's not clear whether they need to be in the exact center if there's, like, some small radius that constitutes the center, so therefore multiple people can benefit from it. But whatever the truth of this ritual, only Hohenheim and the homunculus in the flask are benefiting from this whole ritual. You know, that's rather unfortunate, because, you know, Hohenheim didn't really consent to this atrocity, and I feel like the king might not have done this had he known either. You know, if this will wipe out the entirety of your country, but you get to live forever, is it worth it? I mean, it is if you're a bad king, perhaps. Yeah, definitely feel for Hohenheim a little bit. This has got to be a rather weird experience, being disassembled within the gate, and then being reassembled later with an immortal body that won't die, with, you know, half of a country's worth of souls riling within you. Gotta be rather uncomfortable, I'd imagine. Not gonna get much quality sleep that way. You know, something I do find interesting is that despite however much time has passed between now and the present day, Hohenheim hasn't really changed much about his appearance aside from the clothes he wears. You know, because Xerxes kind of being like an analog to ancient Greece, he wears like robes or a toga, but in the modern day, which is more like 20th century Europe, he wears clothes more suitable to that setting. But, you know, he still has the same hairdo, same beard and all that. You know, I guess true style never goes out of fashion, but at the same time, you know, there's room for a little change, you know. You could always get a different haircut. Alright, so here we go. This is the first instance in which there is Hohenheim and Father. You know, the homunculus decided that if he was going to live forever too, he might as well give himself a nifty body, and who better than Hohenheim, the person he saw fit to bestow immortality upon. You know, I think it's nice that Hohenheim is rather horrified by all of this, rather than delighted at being immortal. I mean, I guess it's pretty easy to be horrified considering that he is now full of wailing, trapped souls, and if he really focuses, he can hear all of them. Man, who knows how many years it's been since Xerxes collapsed overnight, but even so, he's still sort of tormented by what happened there. I mean, I'd imagine it would definitely take a couple lifetimes to get over, that's for sure. So this is interesting in a way. Hohenheim and Izumi sort of running into each other and getting on like old friends. Oh dear. So Hohenheim knows what's going on. You know, he's had however many lifetimes to accrue medical knowledge. He obviously knows what's up here if he doesn't necessarily know the cause. Oh, take that back. You know, he knows. He knows that she has seen the truth. And as a result, she's lost a couple organs here and there. So, you know, the foreboding music, definitely not good here. And, you know, I have to wonder, given that Hohenheim just sort of, like, impaled her, has he decided to impede Father's schemes by eliminating sacrifices? Izumi's husband certainly seems to think that this might be the case, but, you know, it's not exactly true. Whatever Hohenheim did, he seems to have helped, even if his method looks, rather harmful. You know, I kind of like how they're always sort of pulling these little twists with Hohenheim here, because they really make him out to look like a villain, but he's really just doing good things repeatedly. You know, they always try and make you second guess him. So just to tie everything together, you know, we're talking about the Philosopher's Stone a little bit. Can't help but compare it to Hohenheim referring to himself as a Philosopher's Stone. And I guess considering how packed full of souls he is, he's kind of correct. You know, I like how they sort of juxtapose Hohenheim with Ed talking about how a Philosopher's Stone is, like, no bigger than a pebble. And how to get something bigger, you'd probably have to kill hundreds of thousands of people. Very chilling stuff. Alright, well that's it for this episode. If you've enjoyed it, then by all means, tune in for the next one. See you, Space Cowboy.